This is the Mickey Miles and More podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More podcast, Chris Eliopoulos and Mike Scopa.
Welcome back, Milers. I'm your host, Chris Eliopoulos, and with me, as always, is the Dean of Disney, Michael Scopa, the ever-famous. How's your holiday season coming, Mike? Is it getting cold up there?
It's getting cold. We had a little bit of snow yesterday, but just the dusting. I'm hoping that we don't get any snow till April. And
April?
Would be, then it's not going to last long. That's for sure.
That's true. It'll melt.
It'll melt. So it's getting cold. And, you know, as you get older, you don't like the cold. So let's hope that, you know, things aren't going to be too bad for everybody this winter. And a belated happy birthday to Walt Disney.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm a little worried. Just I keep thinking back to that time when we went down for the marathon and the Northeast got hit with a storm and we were kind of trapped down there.
Yeah,
I have a lot going on. Like, I'm literally flying out of Disney and going on a book tour for a couple of weeks. And so, boy, I don't need any bad weather messing me up.
No, I can see, I can imagine you're thinking about flight delays. And yeah. will you be traveling mostly in the Northeast? Or
so we're actually, as we're recording this, we're announcing the tour plan, which is, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to run the marathon and then I fly north to Maryland. My family goes home. I go to Maryland. I meet up with Brad, my co-creator of the books and the show. And we're actually going to have an event with Linda Carter, Wonder Woman.
Awesome.
In Maryland, and then we go off to Virginia. So hopefully the weather won't be too bad, I hope. And then actually I go back down south again. I go down to the Miami area, then over to Atlanta, then to Denver. I mean, then to Dallas, and then up to Denver. Denver's got me worried.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And then after, and in Denver, we're going to have an event with Temple Grandin, the Dr. Temple Grandin, the scientist and autism spokesperson. And then I head to Chicago and Cincinnati. So I'm hoping the weather holds out for those couple of weeks. But if the listeners are anywhere in the area, please come and visit me at one of the shows. You'll probably see it online, the listing of where we're going to be.
Where online would they find it?
So we're going to start posting. Penguin Random House will be posting on our social media. So if you follow me on anything, you can find, we have a whole big, beautiful graphic that has all the information for you. So
not coming to New Hampshire, huh?
Not this time. Not this time. I would like to get back up there and do an event up there, but we shall see.
Maybe
the next one. Yeah. All right. So here we go. It's time for the news.
Time for the news. A lot of stuff going on. Again, it's I'm trying to help those who are planning trips now or later and give some ideas. One of the things that really crazy, Chris, is that there are a lot of parks that are selling out like crazy. For instance, the Magic Kingdom on Christmas Day is sold out. You have to be the ghost of Walt Disney to be allowed in the Magic Kingdom that day. It doesn't matter what kind of a ticket type you have, a day guest, resort guest, annual pass holder, DVC, you cannot get into the Magic Kingdom on Christmas Day. It is sold out. Now, I assume that although the reservations are sold out, I'm guessing that you can still get into the Magic Kingdom after 2 p.m. We'll see.
Interesting.
Yeah, if there's anybody out there who is going to be down there on Christmas Day, or if you know if there's a possibility that you would be banned from the park, not banned from the park, but prevented from going in after 2 o'clock, please let me know. But I assume that you can get in after 2 o'clock. I think that's when they're sold out. It's just from opening to 2 o'clock, it's sold out. So
it's crazy.
So that's sold out. Epcot and Magic Kingdom are both sold out on New Year's Eve. So, but again, when I say New Year's Eve, you think of nighttime. It's the 31st of December. So they are both sold out. However, I did note note that it said that annual pass holders may still visit the theme parks after 2 o'clock. So you can visit Epcot and Magic Kingdom after 2 o'clock, but New Year's Eve is Sunday. Is that a Sunday? I don't remember.
I know. I was going to say Christmas Eve is a Sunday.
So New Year's Eve is a Sunday.
Yeah.
Right. So guess what? If you're an annual pass holder, you're still shut out because annual pass holders cannot go to the Magic Kingdom after 2 p.m. on a Saturday or a Sunday. All these specificities, I mean, it's just crazy to remember.
So many rules and regulations. Like, you just want to go to a park and you want to, like, see things.
Yeah.
Like, why do you always have to, like, overplan everything?
Spontaneity was killed. COVID killed spontaneity.
Yeah.
They're also, if you're an annual pass holder, you're shut out of Magic Kingdom on December 9th, 16th, and the 19th. So all kinds of things are going on. And
that's crazy.
If you haven't made reservations for particular dates, then you've got someplace else you need to go to.
Time to go to Disney Springs or go to one of the other parks, right?
Yeah. So as we mentioned earlier, this is Walt Disney's birthday week. And in Epcot, they unveiled the Walt the Dreamer statue that we've been hearing about.
Right.
For the last year or two, there have been green walls that have been up in the middle of Epcot as you walk in. Those are all down. And they have revealed what they call the World Celebration, World Nature, and World Discovery areas. And in back of Spaceship Earth, there is an area that people could sit down in. And that's where the Walt the Dreamer statue is. And that was unveiled this week. The interesting thing about that is that people are lined up to take a photograph with that statue.
Of course.
I mean, yesterday
they did it with the Roy Disney statue in the Magic Kingdom, and everybody does it in the Magic Kingdom hub. So,
however,
yesterday
the queue line to take a photo with him was 60 minutes long.
Okay. You could ride Spaceship Earth twice and come back and still be online, right?
He's sitting down with his hands folded and he's looking out into the pathway to World Showcase Plaza and Lagoon. It's kind of funny. Next time I get a chance to go to Epcot, I'm definitely going to have to check that.
We'll have to
check that statue, but I just wanted to mention that.
If you get to see it.
If I get to see it. Besides unveiling that statue, Epcot now has this week brand new entrance music that is also played in that general area of Spaceship Earth and World Discovery. And I heard a little bit of it. It's not too bad. I'm a purist. I like the old stuff, but I think this new piece of music will work for Epcot.
Mm-hmm.
So people who are going to Epcot in the future should be listening for that new music.
Okay.
Let's see. The only other piece of news that I can share with is that there was a new restaurant that opened in Disney Springs, I believe, a couple of days ago. It's called Eat, spelled E-E-T.
Yeah.
And it is described as being a casual Indian restaurant. So other than Sanaa, if you want to call Sanaa an Indian restaurant, although it's Indian, African, whatever, it's probably something that's needed. It's a cuisine that was not really at Disney Springs. I guess you could make an argument for... No, I wouldn't make an argument for that restaurant.
Don't make any arguments.
No.
Okay.
So that's all the news that's fit to be told.
Nice. All right. So on our last show, we did... we made a mistake. We did the Magic Kingdom and we did Epcot. So we have two more parks to deal with today. So why don't you lead us off, Mike, and tell us about... I was going to say MGM Studios or Disney's Hollywood Studios, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Because it's gone through a change.
Names changes. So,
yeah, we framed this as saying nobody's perfect and how we talked about how when Walt Disney World was put together, there were thoughts, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. and you try to do as much as you can to look long term as to what you can do up front in the near term that will work forever. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody makes mistakes, and
At least you try, right? I mean, that's
you try and you adopt. And we talked about the Magic Kingdom. We talked about Epcot, and we ran out of time. So this week we're going to take a shot at what is now known as Disney's Hollywood Studios. It used to be called MGM Studios. So my first thought on this park is sort of a mistake that kind of gave birth to other problems in the park. And I think the mistake they made is that when they looked at the piece of property and the piece of land for this theme park, they placed it too far back in this footprint. I think they should have moved the park about 300 yards forward to avoid problems that they would have down the road.
Such as?
Well, for instance, because they have, because they built the park where it is, and they didn't configure it the way I think they should have configured it. Again, you know, it's Monday morning quarterbacking. They limited themselves to expansion of the park. They limited themselves to doing a lot of things. For instance, I would say that because of that original design, we no longer have the Osborne lights, the backlot tour, elimination of fireworks over the building now used by Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. And I'll get into more detail about that. We now have Galaxy's Edge and we have Toy Story Land. Those two lands used to be part of the backlot tour and the New York City streets where we had the Osborne lights. So those two lands now eliminated what we had seen years ago. There is no area because of how far back Galaxy's Edge goes and where Toy Story Land is, especially Galaxy's Edge, that has taken up a lot of land and area that had been used as launch sites. I think I've mentioned this on a previous podcast.
Right.
It removes a lot of launch sites that were used for specific shells used in fireworks displays. I can go back to the 90s where I just loved Sorcery in the Sky, and it was just an amazing nighttime spectacular that was choreographed with music and color and everything. And now you don't see that anymore because they don't have the area back there to safely shoot off those shells.
Right.
Other thing I had mentioned is that the Osborne lights are gone. And so to replace the fireworks stuff and the Osborne lights, they now have shows projected on the Tower of Terror out of necessity. The other thing that I remember way back when is that because of the placement of the park, they really don't have that much room for expansion on the left. And that caused some issues when they were going to build, I think the restaurant was called Magic Underground. And I think it was a David Copperfield restaurant, magical restaurant or whatever. Hmm. And I could be off that. They were going to build one in Orlando. They were going to build one in New York City. Now, I don't know if it was funding that was a problem, but I do know that on that left side, you really can't expand anymore. So again, it's just one of those things where you don't know until down the road. However, right. I don't remember the last time you were there, Chris, but the parking lot at Disney's Hollywood Studio is huge. I mean, right. It's huge. If you take the Skyway from Epcot to the studios, you get a feeling and a sense for how big that is. And I'm thinking, do they really need that huge parking lot? I mean, it's huge. It, I don't want to say it mirrors Epcot, but it's pretty close. It's pretty close. So that
they could use that space.
Yeah, and that would plant the seed for, okay, maybe they should have moved the park up closer. There's one more thing I want to mention, and then I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, yeah.
We both have been to Disneyland. We both have been to Cars Land. We both have been to, let's see. We've been to that racing, Radiator Springs Racers. We've been on that attraction. Outstanding attraction. It might be my favorite attraction in the Disneyland Resort.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. They cannot build that in Florida. I talked to a longtime cast member over there one time, and we were talking. It was near the Walt Disney Story. I decided not to go in because I had the ear of this cast member slash Imagineer. And I had just come back from Disneyland, and I was mentioning how I loved Radiator Springs Racers. And she said, well, about a year or two ago, they brought out some designers. They brought out some Imagineers, and they looked at that. They thought maybe we can put Cars Land out here and make it part of a Pixar place land. So they did some studies. They drilled some holes, and they found out that the water table is pretty high in Florida. Big surprise.
Right.
And if you go back and you think about that attraction, Chris, out there in Disneyland, with the hydraulics and the way things pop up, a lot of that machinery is underground. So the question would be, how would that serve in Florida, where every once in a while the water table will really rise?
Right.
So they decided to scrap that idea of bringing Cars Land out here. And that prompted me to recall something. I know I'm talking too much probably.
No, keep going.
Back in late 80s, early 90s, I want to say it was late 80s, where we have Sunset Boulevard. I found out from one of my Imagineer friends who worked at Epcot, there was a sinkhole right at the front of where Sunset Boulevard is. Actually, it was right behind what was then placed, the Theater of the Stars, which was super, where Sleeping Beauty and the Beast is now shown. But there was a sinkhole that they had to figure out, and it took a while. They finally figured it out, but sinkholes usually have something to do with water somehow that's underneath that just brings down the silt or whatever. So there has been a problem with that park in terms of placement, expansion, and possibly the mistake of not building it up like they did the Magic Kingdom.
Right.
That's my spiel on the studios, Chris. I'm going to turn it over to you now.
Yeah. No. Well, the one thing I will say, even that'll dovetail off of that, is the fact that they didn't design the flow very well.
Yes.
Like you go down the LA Boulevard and it just comes to a dead end. Like there's always this feeling in the Magic Kingdom or Epcot, like you can continue on. There's not a lot of dead ends in anywhere. And I feel like they just didn't design the park the way that Walt would have done it. You know, he sort of had this urban planning mini degree that he created for himself that he basically studied so hard and figured out how to flow people. And I don't think it flows very well. Because it's the same way on the other side too. You sort of end in a lot of dead ends here and there. But beyond that one, I will say, I think it's weird. It was three mistakes, but it shouldn't be a mistake. One was putting up the Mickey Sorcerer's hat, right? That was like, they did that. At first, everybody's like, that's a mistake. And then it was sort of like everybody got used to it and became the theme of the park. The second mistake was the wand, the 2000 wand that kind of obstructed views. I don't know if you remember that. It was on the side of the hat.
Yeah, 2000. Yeah,
I'm trying to remember what that was. I thought maybe there's a sorcerer's
but that point about the hat is well taken. Yeah,
and then they took it away. Like, it became the symbol and then they took it away. And then there's no real, again, with the flow, there's no weenie there. You know, you don't really look for something to go head to, you know? So that's mine anyway.
No, you're absolutely right. When you think of Magic Kingdom, Epcot, and Animal Kingdom, there is a centerpiece for the spoke, for the spokes, for the wheel, and everything flows out. But in the studios, they don't have that. Another mistake I think they made was that, again, it's too small and the streets are too small. And a lot of people associate a Disney theme park to have a parade. And there was maybe one or two kind of small parades in Disney MGM Studios at the time, but the streets were too narrow and the sidewalks presented a problem. There was a parade, and the name escapes me right now, that was to be transported from Disneyland, maybe California Adventure, to the studios. But before they were able to put it in the studios, they had to go through and they had to grade a lot of the sidewalks and make them like ramp like so that the floats could actually make the turn. But I think to this day, there is a feeling that the theme park, like you said, does not have the flow of the others, and it's kind of awkward. And because of that, you know, you don't have a parade. And again, it's Monday morning quarterbacking, and they try to fix it. But sometimes when you plan something, it's like, okay, how do we get around it? So they're faced with workarounds regarding these mistakes.
Yeah. It's rough. What's your next one?
All right, let's go to Disney's Animal Kingdom.
Okay.
This was a big project. It took a long time to build. It's the largest theme park. It had a budget of, I think it had a budget of $800 million. It's a theme park that's a zoo, although they kept on promoting it and marketing it as not a zoo. But it is a zoo and a theme park, and it's very hard to not associate those two terms with it. The Animal Kingdom theme park had a predecessor, Busch Gardens, I guess you could say, but they wanted to improve upon that, and they tried. There are a couple of things that have always bothered me about Disney's Animal Kingdom, and thinking about it this morning, I had some thoughts, and then I added more as I was going along, and I said, I have to stop. We're only going to do 45 minutes. One of the things is a Dino Land, where they had those Coney Island games.
Yeah.
I thought that was a waste. And I thought, you know, why do that? It looks so bad. It looks out of place. They spend so much time and effort and design work in certain areas of the park. And then you walk into this Coney Island area.
Yeah.
I just, Esther and Chester, or I forget what it was, what it was called. It always bothered me. It's going to change. They're going to be making some changes over the next 3 to 5 years. And one of the changes is they're going to bring in an Indiana Jones attraction, but I think it's going to go, and you mentioned
it's going to go in dinosaur.
Time. It's going to go in dinosaur. It's the same track, Chris. It's the same track. So yeah. There were a lot of people that were really disappointed with that part of the park. The thing that has bothered me from day one, and I noticed this right off the bat, the very first day I went in there, and it continues to bother me. And I had to do some research on this, and I found some very interesting information. The problem is, think of that very first logo that they put out. And I haven't seen the logo recently, but do you remember the shadows of the animals that were up against the tree? And the center of that logo was a dragon, and it looked like a pterodactyl.
Right.
And that was supposed to represent Beastly Kingdom. On top of that, the as you get off the tram or the buses and you walk to the front of the park, the place where you purchase the tickets, where it's, say, Disney's Animal Kingdom, I haven't noticed lately. I'll have to look at some recent pictures if I've taken them. There's a head of a dragon on the facade.
Yeah.
Okay. That's number two. Number three, when Animal Kingdom was about to open, Michael Eisner made a marketing film that I believe was shown probably at, during the Christmas parade show. And he's walking around the Animal Kingdom and he says, this is a land for animals. And he said, real and imagined.
Right.
So he talked about that. And I guess I'm still waiting, or I have been waiting for a long time for that mystical beastly kingdom. Okay. So where was that supposed to go? Do you remember Camp Minnie and Mickey?
Yep.
That would be as you walk down on the left, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, that Camp Mickey and Minnie area was apparently supposed to be just a temporary holding place until they had some final details for the Beastly Kingdom area. Right. And in fact, they had three attractions planned for that part of the park. One was called A Quest for Unicorns. It was supposed to talk about, unicorns. I mean, you know,
right?
Kids love unicorns. And my granddaughter loves unicorns. That was going to be sort of a dark ride with unicorns and stuff like that. All right. Number one, that was the first attraction. The second attraction, I don't remember the name, but it was going to be a boat ride, a musical boat ride based on Fantasia. Fantasia had a lot of animals, a lot of mystical animals. Thing. Yeah. So, you know, Chernabog and whatever. That was going to be the second one. The third one was to be a roller coaster based on traveling through a dragon's lair. And it was called the Dragon's Tower. Never happened.
Yeah.
So then Eisner left. Bob Iger came, the acquirer, and he talked with James, what's his name? Avatar, Cameron. Pandora. Yep.
Well, that came about because of the Harry Potter stuff, and they realized they needed something. And at the time, they weren't going to get – they didn't think they were getting Star Wars. There was no way they were going to get it. So they were looking for some kind of property, and so they made a deal with Cameron.
And Pandora, the world of Avatar.
And then they bought Star Wars, like, a year later. So it's like
– yeah, I mean, I think that – and it's always been noted that it comes down to control. And they would not have enough creative control with Harry Potter as they would have liked. But come on, you know that the person who creates anything, if someone came to you and said, we want to do an Xavier Riddle land, wouldn't you want to have the last say?
Yeah.
Because
no, we did it with ours. We have a traveling kids museum, and Brad and I had a say in every step of the process. So
why not?
Yeah. Because we know best. We know what makes the property, you know, what it is. So, yeah. And Cameron apparently had a lot of input into the Avatar section of the park, which I would call a mistake. But actually, I would call the boat ride a big mistake. I think that one's boring. I've been on it once or twice and bored both times. And
there was nothing there.
Yeah. It was just sort of like, you're like, okay. It was like a small world without anything going on. And then, I mean, everybody likes to go on, I don't know what the hell the other ride is called, but which everybody races to, the ride in the Banshee, whatever it's called.
Kilimanjaro Safari?
No. That's the park. The Avatar stuff is just.
Oh, Flights of Fancy.
Flights
of Wonder, I don't know what
whatever.
It's called.
Anyway, but I know. See, this is how bad it is. I'm not a fan of Avatar.
Full disclosure.
Yeah. I mean, I tried to rewatch the movie before we went the last time to the parks. I got halfway through the movie and I turned it off. I was done. But yeah, I mean, that I feel like was a mistake. I think it was a mistake because if they had waited a year or two, they would have gotten Star Wars. They could have done something like that. Could have been, I don't know, you know, you could have thrown Indiana Jones in there and turned it into some, you know, Indiana Jones and the and the Mythical Beasts or something like that, and you know,
yeah, or say, you know, we have other theme parks that talk about fantasy and animals that are born through fantasy, so we're going to stick with real animals. I think that it would have been better to have a land that talked about extinct animals and have a ride that talks about, okay, here's the dodo bird, here's the dinosaur, here's this and that.
Yeah.
I think that they made a mistake. But that's my thought. There were a lot of complaints about the lack of attractions when the park opened. And I believe that the Asia part of the park did not open the same day that the park, you know, had its grand opening. And there were complaints about there were few attractions to do, and it became a half day park.
We used to call it a half day park.
Yeah. They
didn't have Expedition Everest in.
Right. They called Joe Rohde and they said, we need something. And he helped design Everest. Now, I know that the original budget for the Animal Kingdom was $800 million. And I think that, what did I hear? That Everest, whatever 1/7 of $800 million is, that's how much Everest cost.
Right.
So that's what I have for.
The Animal Kingdom thing, I think the biggest problem they have is the concept. You know, they didn't know what they wanted it to be. They knew we wanted animals. They sort of wanted to make it educational, and then they didn't. Like, there was parts of it that were, but then it was like, oh, let's just throw in thrill rides. Let's give them something fun to do. Like you were saying, I would love to see a land where it was about the environment and preserving extinct animals and what happens with evolution, and sort of educate a little bit as well as entertain. I mean, that was what was great about the Disney brand is sort of you could educate and entertain at the same time. And they don't seem to be able to do that in that park. Like, you know, you've got that. What's that section where you can go pet the goats and stuff like that? And there's an area where you can
conservation station.
Station, right. That right.
That's...
And then even that, you don't get the people out there because you basically the educational part, you stuck away on a train ride where nobody wants to go, and there's nothing to see other than a couple of goats and, you know, we need edutainment in these parks. Either decide you're going to educate or entertain, or, you know, but you sort of didn't do both at the same time as well as they used to. So that's a complaint of mine.
So I think we've pretty much, you know, maybe someday we'll talk about Disney Springs, although they haven't made too many mistakes down there, if any.
Although I guess they considered it a mistake that they originally had it to be like a nightclub area. You'd have to get into a gate to get in to go see the different places. And now it's more of a family shopping and dining thing. So I think they corrected their mistake.
Exactly. You took the words right out of my mouth. Pleasure Island was a mistake and they corrected it.
Yeah. So
they corrected it.
But other than that, so what do you think? You want to give some tips?
I think we have time for a few things. I wanted to talk a little bit about the new movie Wish.
Oh, have you seen it?
Michelle and I went to see it, and I wanted to make sure that we got a chance to talk a little bit about it. Without spoilers. So I made a few notes here and I want to go through them really fast. I think that the movie is both similar and dissimilar to what the traditional Disney movie is. Hmm. And you wouldn't understand my comment until you go see the movie. And I'm going to leave it at that. I think the movie will be enjoyed by young children, but I think the older adults will enjoy it more if they have watched most of the Disney movies made since Snow White. That's all I'm saying.
I thought you were going to say if they had a few drinks, but
true. That too. There are a lot of Easter eggs. There are a lot of references to a lot of things. And Michelle was catching them left and right while we were watching it.
Of course, she's good at that stuff.
Yeah, she's very good at that stuff. Yeah. The movie is about a young girl named, she's probably a teenager, 18. Her name is Asha. She's not a princess. She lives on an island that is ruled by a sorcerer named Magnifico, and Magnifico protects people's wishes. I'm going to leave it at that. I don't want to use any spoilers, but that's the premise. He saves people's wishes. Or protects them. There is an obvious pair of characters in the movie that is a marketeer's, merchandiser's dream. It is a talking goat and a little character that looks like a Teletubby. It's a star, and the name is Star. So watch for them soon to appear in your Target toy store area, whatever.
Right.
There is a classic song in the middle of the show, probably the only song that's to me is worth listening to. Let's see. It's probably supposed to be the next generation of How Far I'll Go and Let It Go. I think it's a pretty good song. New composers, new songwriters for this movie. And here's my final thought. I want people to keep in mind that when they go see the movie, not to leave when the movie ends.
Oh,
watch the credits, stay in your seat, watch the credits. I'm not going to tell you why I want you to do this, but we were pleasantly pleased. We were just, oh, this is awesome. And it might have been one of the best parts of the movie.
Oh,
cool. I won't tell you why. No one in the theater left until the screen was completely dark. Hmm. So,
and when you say all, it was just you and Michelle.
Yeah. After we finish the recording, Chris, if you want to know what it is, I'll tell you.
No, it's fine. I gotta see it when I see it.
Final thoughts. We did watch. I don't know if you got a chance to watch Luminous on Zoom on YouTube or the live stream the other night, Chris. We watched it. I was texting with Becky, who was down there.
All right.
And I was trying to get an idea of the impressions people got watching it live, whereas compared to what we saw
on the screen. Yeah.
The music was kind of odd. It seemed disjointed in Epcot. There were a couple of Toy Story songs and whatever, a lot of fireworks. It wasn't that long, and it really didn't tell a story like Illuminations. And my final comment, and again, I haven't seen it live, so maybe someday I will.
Yeah.
It was, what did I want to say? It didn't have much of a finale. And finally, there was no Christmas tag that we have seen in the past. So
right. What was the first showing, right? So
first showing, so we'll see.
Maybe they give it a week or so before they start doing that. Maybe,
yeah. I don't know. So finally, I have one tip.
Okay.
And it's not my tip. It's from a friend of mine who is down there.
Okay.
And she sent me an email. So I want to give a shout out to my dear friend, Nina Epps, who sent me an email. And she was telling me about the Christmas tree stroll down in Disney Springs. There used to be a Christmas tree trail that used to be at the far end of Disney Springs. And it was made up of, I don't know, 30, 40 Christmas trees, each tree having a theme, Beauty and the Beast, Cinderella, whatever. But now they have something called a Christmas tree stroll. And it's best if I read to you her words in her email. She said, they started this in 2020, and it replaced the Christmas tree trail to promote social distancing. It's kind of a treasure hunt. You can get a free map that has a sticker for each tree. Then you look for the trees located around Disney Springs, and you place the appropriate sticker in each tree's location on that map. When you're done, you show the map to a cast member at one of the designated redemption locations, and you get a prize for finding each tree. The prize is just a button that says Christmas Tree Stroll with the Year. But it's fun to locate the trees. I actually much prefer the stroll to the previous Christmas tree trail because the trail was always so crowded. Now the trees are spread out and easier to see, except when people sit on the walls that are in front of some of them. though I think they put out fewer trees for the stroll than they had on the trail. But here's the thing that I think a lot of people are going to be excited. She said, and I just saw on the Disney Springs website that this year's stroll has a few trees that will interact with Magic Band Plus. So the tip is take a trip to Disney Springs. Yeah, take a stroll. So that's my tip for today, Chris.
We love it. We have to take a look. Maybe one. Hopefully they're still up there when we go the marathon. So.
Yeah, it should be.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this week. So on behalf of the Dean of Disney, Mike Scopa, I'm Chris Eliopoulos. We'll see you on the road and in the box.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.